Welcome to the November 2017 Third Thursday Chat on Burnout.
Where this first came into my consciousness was I was a consultant here in the UK working with a group in Silicon Graphics. They were a computer hardware company, and they had bought Cray Computer. And one of the people that came over from Cray Computer, and I mean, these were incredibly bright people, very motivated, very hardworking. To work with the kind of machines they were working with, they had to be. And this one woman who worked with the team I was on was just key to the group. She always knew what was going on, was always there. If something needed to get done, her hand was the first one to go up. Just relied on her. She was pleasant. She was easy to get along with. I never heard a complaint from her. And I was in her office one day, and somehow she started telling me that she was really struggling. And I was like, wow, what's going on? And she said, you know, I'm really not coping. I'm not sleeping well. I'm just starting to feel really bad. And so she went to her doctor, and her doctor told her she had burnout and told her she had to leave work for at least, I think it was 3 months initially. And of course, we were all devastated because losing Linda was like losing the Rock of Gibraltar. We didn't know how we were going to cope, literally, because she was so involved in so many aspects of the organization's work. And she tried after, I think it was 3 months, to come back with her doctor's approval. And she was unable to do so, physically and emotionally. She was absolutely unable to come back. She tried her hardest, and she simply couldn't. And she left long term after that. So I had a few conversations with her through the struggle, and it was so painful to watch because she so much wanted to be able to come back. And yet she was physically and mentally, in terms of her thought processes, just incapable of doing so. And so I've made it my business to know a little bit about what they call burnout. Obviously, I'm not a diagnostician. And so for this call, I went online and I was looking at some of the signs and symptoms for burnout. Cynicism, depression, and lethargy. Loss of control of how you carry out your job. Working towards goals that don't resonate with you. A lack of social support. It happens over time. And it's an inability to function on a personal or a professional level. And that's absolutely what I saw with my colleague. Mm-hmm. Specifically, chronic fatigue, insomnia, forgetfulness, impaired concentration, physical symptoms, an increased susceptibility to illness, loss of appetite, anxiety, depression, anger, loss of enjoyment, pessimism, isolation, detachment, apathy and hopelessness, irritability, lack of productivity and poor performance. And I thought this was really interesting, closed thinking. In other words, unable to expand beyond what was right in front of you, but being contracted in. So those are the key pieces that I noted, and that certainly many of those resonated with me. Now, one comment that they did make, at least in one of the articles I read, was if you or someone you know thinks that they might have burnout, it's really important to go to the doctor, because some of these, like the depression, are similar to characteristics of, for instance, low-functioning thyroid or some other physical illnesses. So it's absolutely important to get those ruled out, and simple blood tests will do that. But I'm curious, what jumped out or resonated with you guys as I read through that list?
Every one of them rang a bell for me. Mm-hmm. And early on, I think you said something about it being progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
that happens over time.
Happens over time. And I think it's insidious. And when it feels so justified, it's natural that you'd feel this way because of, which feeds it as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thinking. So every one of them. My experience of burnout has been very personal in terms of my son, who is an extremely talented computer geek who is very disillusioned with his career. And he allows himself to be pushed into things that he doesn't value. Anyway, he has left the entire arena because doing something 70 or 80% doesn't work for him. And a lot of the corporate thing is, you know, get it out there and let someone else work out the bugs, and he's just not, so he has to walk away, which is kind of sad. So that's the burnout that is front and center for me at the moment.
That's part of why it's so painful, because it's like that proverbial frog in the kettle of water that's heating up. And it's not noticing that the heat is getting to the point where he's actually dying. As far as I understand it, severe burnout can lead to death. That's why, for instance, this colleague's doctor told her, no, you cannot go back to work. You have got to find a different lifestyle, because if you go back to work, it's going to kill you. And I've seen this. I've seen bits of this with an executive or two that I've worked with. And it can be very hard to bring it to someone's attention in a way that they are able to hear you.
I would say I agree with every single one of those points. I mentally would feel the worst when things didn't work out well. The results weren't what you wanted, not only projects, but also people, because I tend to help people a lot. But people don't necessarily help me very much.
Mm-hmm.
And that reciprocity you just talked about, more and more I'm going, okay, if you're not holding up your end of the bargain, I don't need you sucking me dry for energy or talent or enthusiasm and get next to nothing or nothing in return.
So for you, it felt like a personal thing from the people around you as opposed to something from the organization itself.
Yeah, I never really paid much attention to the organization itself. And I would postulate that most everybody is somewhere along that spectrum line from completely happy and carefree all the way to burnout. Mm. And it ebbs and flows like waves. And if it keeps going progressively further and further out and towards the burnout side, then it becomes an increasingly bigger problem. Depression can result in somebody taking their own lives. Mm. And I would guess that the people you're dealing with are high-performing people who want to improve. And they're probably not real conducive to hearing that they're underperforming because of burnout, or they're not as open-minded as they should be because of burnout or anything else. Mm. So it is hard to knock them upside the head and say, this is real stuff.
I also think in terms of the productivity and the thinking capabilities that there's a point along the line where a lot of pressure, you may make a few mistakes that everybody would make, but there comes a point at which you don't recognize your own ineffectiveness.
Right.
And that's when you're really in trouble, because you don't even know what you don't know about yourself and where you're headed.
That's why I had other people watch for me, because I was making uncharacteristic mistakes.
Yeah, and I think this question of social support is actually a really important one. It's one that over the years I've gotten more and more bullish about, because I think we all experience through our lives a lot that many of us don't know how to share. I know the family I grew up in, we didn't share a lot of stuff. So it took a lot of work for me to feel comfortable opening my mouth and talking about things that were difficult. And in fact, this just happened again last night. I was talking with my coaching supervisor, and I had some stuff going on, and I just realized, wow, I really need to unload some of this. And it was hard. It was not stuff I necessarily wanted to or would have been able to say to just anybody.
Yeah.
But because I have worked with her over a number of years, and I know how well she will be able to handle what I have to say to her, and she's not going to try to fix me or pity me or some of the other things that have a tendency to stop us rather than allowing us to continue to open up, it lifted so much for me. So I think being able to put around us a good social support system is really important and very difficult for many people, because for a lot of people, much like me, they don't feel like they're supposed to talk about the difficult stuff. It took me years to realize it was okay.
Well, on top of that, often the burnout is the amount and demands of work and so forth. So your social support system and your family support system diminish. So you haven't maintained them at a level that you have that history that you don't have to repeat in order to bring them up to where you are. It's great to have your supervisor be someone that knows you, has a context that they can put it in, so it's less risky for you, both in terms of how they'll deal with you, but how they'll evaluate you based on what you say. They have a much larger context, and your social friends and your family are often left behind in terms of you haven't had a lot of connection, and you haven't been very forthright, so it's pretty hard to all of a sudden be receptive and not be trained to know how to deal with it. So,
I would agree with that totally. Like you, I was brought up, you don't discuss any of that stuff. You just keep your head down, keep on plugging, hope that it's going to turn out in the end. And except for a dear friend who has been pounding on me for the last 7 years to talk about feelings, which were never a topic of conversation in the family, and be on a conversation like this, which I've never done. 8 years ago, there's no way I'd have been on this call.
Well done.
She's got a lot of good points.
Well, well done you for listening to her and starting that process, because it's, to me, is one of the biggest gifts I'm able to give my clients. And I actually had a boss who said this to me. When I became a coach, I started, as many early coaches do, just reaching out to anybody and everybody around me. And coach teachers would encourage me to reach out to the people you most respect. You never know. They might just want to work with you. And so I reached out to a former boss of mine who I totally had him on a pedestal and had just such respect for what he had done in terms of starting this business, which is how I met him in the first place. And I said to him after a while of working with him, I said, you know, it feels like I'm not doing enough for you because I'm just listening. And he said, you don't have any idea how important that is to me, because there's nobody around me who isn't either an employee, and so they need or want something from me, or a family member who, with all the best will in the world, sometimes they need and want something from me. You're the only person I talk to at this point who doesn't need or want something from me, who just gives me a place to hear what I have to say, process it for and with myself. And obviously I would give him bits and pieces of questions as well to help him look at something that I might have noticed, see if he noticed it as well. But he said that just having someone to listen as skillfully as you listen is just huge, and totally changed my sense of myself as a coach, because it let me off the hook in terms of feeling like I'm supposed to somehow give this person something. Just being there and being able to bear witness and ask some questions that helped open up the conversation was what he needed the most, and that was a huge revelation to me.
I would say that fits the bill for most high-performing people. This person I was talking about said, everybody likes you because you do so much for them. And it's not that they necessarily expect that, although many do, but that's the way it works out. And I think most people do not think very deeply about what's going on in their lives because they're so busy living their lives. So when you And when you stop them and make them think about the deeper topics, they probably have the answers locked inside themselves, and your job is to unlock them for them and any additional insights you can provide. But most people don't think about what's going on. Most people that I see feel like they're victims to everything, and the stuff I do with them is try and make it clear what the choices really are. If you're willing to pay the price, go for it.
And if you're not, don't step up. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Shut up and say, I made this choice. It's not that society or my boss or whatever made me do it. I chose that. And then go make the best of whatever you choose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to feel in charge of your own self is pretty empowering. Lose that a lot along the way. I mentioned my work at Procter & Gamble. And I was there with a man who calls himself a cultural anthropologist, and he did a lot of market research stuff for probably 50 or more products at P&G. And so he did these archetype studies of what is the customer's experience with this product or this concept or whatever. But I gained so much from him in terms of his view of Americans and how we approach work, you know, if you can generalize it, and he could, in powerful ways that we have in our culture. It's don't just stand there, do something.
Mm. Right.
You know, ready, fire, aim. Mm, and
right.
He was very critical of that, and it was holding a mirror up to us. Most of it, I really had to go, aha. And some of it was coming from his frame, too, which was, I think, a little warped. But I do think that we are programmed to produce, to do whatever, and not spend as much time standing back and making choices that serve us or serving other people's needs and don't see necessarily the impact it has on us until we're burned out.
I agree completely. I spent years and years mentoring, and finally one day after 10 or 12 years of doing that, I said, I probably would benefit myself from having a mentor. I don't have one.
And you were doing all the work for your clients, right?
I was. That's exactly what I was doing. And I said to my mentor a few years into the relationship, most of my time is spent doing things, and maybe 5% of my time is spent thinking. And most of that is in a car with a tape recorder, not in the office. For my job, I think I'd be doing more of that. And he was two levels above me. And he said, I don't think much either. He says, I'm doing stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And he was one level down from a vice president. And I said, who is thinking around here? We're all doing and nobody's thinking.
Yes. And I think it's really important to take time out, ideally every day, and just breathe and meditate and journal and have some of these kinds of conversations.
You know, I wonder how many times in a day we hear or think to ourselves, or make the statement or start a response to someone with, I was just thinking. And it so diminishes the value, you know, depending on the emphasis you put on the word, it still is an expression that's so commonly used. I was just thinking, as if that were no big deal. But I thought I'd share this, right?
Mm. Yep.
I was just thinking.
Well, it's been really fun talking with you guys.
Thank you so much, Deborah. This is provocative, interesting, supportive, and the conversation doesn't end here. Your conversation will be in my head for a while, and thank you for taking me somewhere else from where I was when I picked up the phone. Thank you.
Deborah, your skills are apparent, and I appreciate you having me on the call.
Absolutely. Bye for now.